What's up, sinners and choosers? Welcome to another episode of Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe. Got a great episode for you here today with Devin Blake and Rachel Mack, also known as the Mack Blakes. I've known Devin and Rachel for a while now through the open mic scene, going back to the Coffee Gallery in Altadena, which I think is still there, but it's not the same. You can't do open mic comedy there. I mean, you can, but you will be asked to leave. But back in the day, we did it every week, and that's where I first got to know them. And they've actually both been on the podcast before. In the podcast first year, Rachel was talking about her Christian background. She was one of the few Christian comedians I knew about. And Devin talked about going to a Quaker church and his interest and involvement in that church. It was great to check in with them. I was really curious because they're married and they've been married for a couple years. And I know they have an interfaith marriage that's more and more common these days. It used to be extremely uncommon, but now the statistics say 40% of marriages since 2010 have been interfaith marriages. And it was, and that was my original goal, was to check in with how people respect each other's views and look at the values underneath their views. And we do a good bit of that. And we also get to hear some of Rachel's struggles with Christianity, which definitely mirrors some of my earlier struggles with Christianity. And I really love this episode. They're great comedians. Each of them run a different monthly show. Rachel runs Bitch Face Comedy, which is a monthly show at Jones Coffee in Pasadena on Friday night. And Devin runs Backyard Bootlegs and Cafecito Organico in Silver Lake the last Saturday of every month. And other than that, I just want to give a brief update. Since I record these episodes a couple weeks prior in advance, I'm feeling deeper and deeper into my call for Unitarian Universalism since this. I've now attend two different churches in Pasadena, and I'm still figuring out what seminary I'm going to, but I'm getting a better and better sense of that. And I'm really jazzed up about theology in this episode. But again, as I've said on prior episodes, I don't even know what I don't know yet as far as a theological discussion goes. So take everything I say with a grain of salt. And honestly, if you belong to some kind of mainline Christian denomination, assume your pastor probably knows a lot of this stuff I'm talking about already. Although maybe he or she still thinks I'm a heretic. But anyway, I just don't want people to think I'm preaching anything other than humility, even though I have my own strong opinions on Christianity. But I did recently go on a retreat with fellow aspiring Unitarian Universalist ministers, and I just feel very much like I found my colleagues. I feel totally accepted for who I am and what I believe and what I don't believe, and I found that a lot of us are a bunch of world religion nerds, and we see the common language in all things, and we also get the skepticism that anybody has towards any particular practice or divinity. And I'm just so excited and feeling on the right track, and I pray, I ask for help, that whatever it is that's greater than me, to keep me continuously growing and ever interested and ever humble. And specifically humbled by awe and wonder that one might experience when you're in a hot tub and somebody offers a cheese plate and tells you to dip that cheese in Dijon mustard, and you've never even thought of dipping cheese in Dijon mustard before, but you do, and you're like, maybe there is a God after all. So that's what's going on with me. If you like this episode, go to chooseyourownreligion.com for old previous episodes, or scroll down your iPhone or on your Android. We have live shows once a month. The next one is on November 4th. They're always on the first Sunday of the month at the Clubhouse in Los Feliz. You can always find the event, who the lineup's going to be, where exactly it's at, on the Facebook page. So I encourage you to find the Facebook page. And tell a friend if you like this show. If this podcast makes you think of somebody, maybe share it with them. Be like, hey, this made me think of you. Leave a rating or review if you want to. All right. That's enough evangelizing. I'm done. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being who you are. Here's Rachel Mack and Devin Blake, the Mack Blakes.
Allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers? Know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
I was thinking about it on the way over going, by the way. I was thinking about it on the way you guys are coming over, how I feel like Rachel, you specifically, have really ushered in the dinner party era of my life. This feels like dinner party-esque.
It does feel like a dinner party.
Adjacent to a dinner party.
I feel bad that we didn't bring dinner.
Well, I didn't offer any dinner either, so.
Well, next time we'll do it over dinner.
Yeah, great.
I love dinner parties. Yeah. I love conversation.
Your parents
love cooking.
Your parents do that.
Yeah.
Your parents are big dinner party people?
Mm-hmm. I mean, they love hosting.
Sure.
And they always had small group Bible studies over at the house.
Right, right.
And they were leaders of Christian Crusade for Christ when I was very little. So they just always had people
They are known for their dinners.
Are they known for their dinners? What's their signature dish?
Oh, I mean, it's very
like if they're trying to really like blow people away.
To blow people away, they'll get out some cocktail shrimp.
Some cocktail shrimp.
Yeah.
Some pretty pretty dank sauce. Cocktail sauce.
They're like they go for like crowd pleasing stuff. So like brats.
Taco dip.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Man, dips. I just realized I have no idea what's a crowd pleaser at a dinner party other than what pleases me.
I guess anything that makes sense at like a barbecue.
Sure.
Yeah, they'll do a lot of like brats and burgers, artichoke dip.
Sure.
Yeah.
Love
chili.
It. Yeah.
Chili. Mm-hmm.
Wait, you guys made last time we were there for your the secular small group.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Didn't you have like a really good chili or something?
I did make vegetarian chili.
Yeah.
We did.
Well, we both did.
I mean, Devin helped me make it.
Love that.
That's a important part of dinner parties is making me feel bad.
Oh, honey.
About my contributions.
Wait, how long you guys been married now?
2 years.
Two blissful years.
2 years and a month.
Still doing great.
Clearly.
Still going on.
Love is alive, Joe.
Say what?
The love is alive.
Oh, good, good. Mm-hmm. Everything you say, Devin, kind of gives you like a little side eye, I'm noticing so far.
Mm.
Yeah.
He's worried that I'm being sarcastic.
Yeah. It sounds like you are.
I also
never say any of that stuff when we're not on a podcast.
So, Rachel, I wanted to check in with you originally because you said you were thinking about God a lot.
I have been thinking about God.
I've been thinking about God quite a lot. And, Devin, have you been thinking about God a lot?
No.
Are you okay? So I'm curious, do you still consider yourself a Christian, Rachel?
You know, I would, but my mom would not.
Okay. That's a great answer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Devin? Where do you fall on all this? You don't
atheist.
Have to fall anywhere. Okay, cool. That's kind of what I was curious about as I was thinking like, oh, it'd be interesting to hear, because I think there's a lot of people that'd be like, oh my God, my partner needs to be on the exact same like page with me as far as like spirituality or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I see it more as like religious belief, almost like aesthetics. Like there can be like beauty and aesthetics to it.
Yeah.
And especially when there's sincerity and there's commitment to whatever it is. And I definitely feel that this is something that Rachel struggled with to the point where it means something to her, and she's kind of like developed it in like this idiosyncratic way. And I think it's in the same way that I'm a fan of her stand-up, I'm a fan of her religious beliefs.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I came to the same realization about beliefs too. In fact, I feel like we may have
We've had a lot of conversations about the nature of belief before.
Yeah. But I mean, that's something that really draws me towards Unitarianism.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because believing in aesthetic is totally, it's kind of up that alley. There's no shared creed in Unitarian Universalism, just principles.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
So amen indeed. I've also been like, I've been listening to a lot of Richard Rohr recently. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar?
Is he the...
No, not Richard Rorty, but Richard Rohr.
Oh, Richard Rorty. No.
No. Okay, Richard Rohr, highly recommend to both of you. He's a Catholic theologian. I guess is he a theologian, thinker? He was a Franciscan. He's a Franciscan monk for a long time. But he talks about like the Jesus and Christ from both a historical, an accurate historical perspective, but also like preaching how revolutionary he really was. And it's been there's a Sermon on the Mount is like a series of audio or of lectures that's on an audiobook now of his. Highly recommend that if you want to drop some truth and love and knowledge bombs on your face sometime.
Sounds great. But the roommates talk about him a lot.
They do?
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting like more and more hip. That's for sure. But what have you been? You said you were reading
God by Reza Aslan.
Yeah. How was that? What's that been kind of? What was that about, basically?
That was extremely
earth-shattering.
Earth-shattering. Yeah.
Wow.
On a couple levels. First of all, because...
Wait, do the quote. When you came out of the bedroom...
I don't remember. I don't know what you're talking about.
She came out of the bedroom after reading the book and was like, big news. I no longer think that the Earth is 6,000 years old.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That is literally earth shattering.
That is earth shattering. And that was the beginning because I don't know if this is true for you, Joe, but I was taught that the world is 6,000 years old.
I was taught I was taught that the stories in the Bible were real.
Yeah, like literally true.
Yeah, I remember that distinctly as a kid asking my mom, like, these are made up, right? And she's like, no, they're real. So I guess I assumed it was like 6,000 years old for a while. I didn't really question that for a long time.
Yeah, I didn't either. And then I even went to, like, at my college, which was Christian, some of the science professors did believe in evolution. Which really pissed off my mom, but I myself didn't really care one way or the other.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really think through it much.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I wouldn't have ever said the world is 6,000 years old to anyone on the street because I would look dumb, but I was also like, I don't know, is carbon dating, trustworthy? You're not sure.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
you're not a scientist.
Yeah. I'm not a scientist. So who knows either way? But I didn't want to look dumb. But then I guess in the back of my mind, I still thought it was 6,000 years old. And when I read this book and he traces the beginnings of God, he really gets into the history of humanity itself and far, far back before the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh shit, there was time before the Bible. And he sounds so smart. And I guess I was wrong. So I guess I just wasn't exposed to much thought about evolution.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, that was the first piece of earth-shattering news.
I mean, that's pretty paradigm shifting.
Yeah.
And then it kept going from there.
Yeah, because he talks about how, like, Judaism came to be and how the Jewish people, like, in the Old Testament, they always talk about their God being greater than other gods,
mm-hmm.
which is weird because in the New Testament, they talk about there only being one God.
Right.
And so that language is weird. And I never thought much about it. But then Reza Aslan was saying that it's because the Jews believed that there were many gods and that theirs was the best. And they actually had to keep believing that theirs was the best and that theirs had a plan because they were defeated by, I don't know, some Babylonians or something. And they're like, in order to maintain our identity, we have to just believe that our God has a plan and he's bigger than these other gods.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was seeing like religion being used for more means than just
truth.
Truth, mm-hmm. political and community means.
Right.
And then when he traced it to Christianity and how Christians were like, this doesn't make sense that Jesus and this God in the Old Testament are the same God because Jesus is all about love and that God was so vindictive and angry.
Mm-hmm.
But then Constantine was like, no, we need one God because we have one emperor. And then they're like, oh, okay, I guess since you're the emperor. And I was like, oh, fuck. So the Bible is not the inerrant word of God like I was told.
Man.
So.
This is all pretty recent.
Yeah, it's pretty fresh.
Yeah, like a month ago.
Damn. How are you feeling?
I'm interested to have your mom read that book.
Yeah, well, my brother gave her Zealot. about Jesus.
Same author.
Same author. She never read it.
Which I think is so unfair because she's given you so
much. Oh, and my mom gave all of us the book Heaven is for Real about the little boy that goes to heaven or whatever.
Right.
And Eli read it so that she would read.
Eli is her brother.
Yeah, Eli read it so that she would read Zealot, and then she never read Zealot.
Wow. Mm. But how are you feeling as far as like a month out or however many, like about all this? Are you feeling like kind of dispirited or are you?
I guess.
At first a little bit.
Really?
At first I was kind of like, I think in the back of my head, I always thought that I would come back to Christianity in the same form that I had been raised on. Even though I had ventured out of that belief, I thought that I would come back to it. And I was just kind of in a limbo for a while. And that book was like, oh no, I can never go back.
To the way I was.
To the way I was. Yeah. And I was sad because I do love a lot of things in Christianity. And then I was like, well, what is my reason for being good if not for God, if not for God's image being in everyone? And then I cried a lot to our roommates, and but they talked me through it.
Yeah, this is where Richard Rohr, I think, actually might help you out a lot.
Yeah,
because he doesn't shy away from the historical facts of, like, he talks about a lot and you know, about how the Gospels in particular were created. They all had their own biases and their sort of agendas. And that's true also of the Old Testament. Something I learned in college. When I learned that stuff, that blew, that was earth shattering for me too. And that made me, you know, walk away from my faith originally for a long time. Even though I've learned since later that this is all stuff that, like, my dad learned in seminary, that like most ministers learn.
Yeah, I'm even sure that a lot of my professors knew this at Christian college.
Oh, they definitely did.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, then how do you guys, how are you evangelicals? Like, this doesn't make sense.
Well, I don't know about the evangelicals. Maybe they, I don't know exactly what they believe, but like most mainline Protestant ministers would have heard all this stuff. And there's something called documentary hypothesis, which is what their hypothesis on how, this is kind of the generally accepted, you know, the hypothesis in the scientific term, where it's like, it's basically, they basically believe it's true. Like, it's pretty much true beyond being able to literally prove it's true, that there were like four main sources that formed the first five books of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And they each had their own agenda and all that stuff. That's when I was like, yeah. So wait, these people aren't interested in truth. They're just interested in trying to push their little scheme. And there was a passage, I can't remember which one it is, but it's in Genesis, in the creation story, where God refers to itself as they, and that's like, we will make ourselves or something. Like, he uses some, it retains some like weird pluralistic form of that language. That hints exactly what you're talking about, that there's actually, they believe there were many gods originally. Because in the region at the time there were many gods, like, competing.
It was polytheistic. Yeah
exactly. But, well, one thing that's that was interesting for that, what Richard Rohr is talking about, that I kind of heard my professor in college say, but because I was like too busy focused on like, what the fuck, none of this is real, it didn't really sink into me. But as far as like the gospel writers go, you know, Richard Rohr's like, well, everybody has a bias. Like, you can't, every single one of us in the world has a bias. So having a bias isn't the problem. Like, you just, as long as you admit what your bias is. And as far as like discerning the gospels, if we know what the bias is, it actually helps us inform and kind of triangulate what maybe the Jesus they were writing about was actually getting at. So for instance, I only noticed because it's like so fresh in my mind, but like Matthew is apparently writing to a middle class audience. And so some of his language was not as harsh on the rich as Luke was, and Luke was writing to the poor. So you can even see this comparison in some of the language choices on the Sermon on the Mount, which is in both. And so again, it's so from that we can kind of deduce, like, and Richard is also fine with saying, like, yeah, Jesus probably didn't literally say, like, you can be a fisher of men. It's like a nice sounding phrase. But like, we can also think, it's just because he may not have literally said that doesn't mean it wasn't true that that was the idea.
Like his vibe.
Right. That was his vibe.
But at that point, what does it even matter if he existed at all?
Existed at all?
Yeah, like if they are lessons written by somebody with an agenda for a specific audience that we can take and use now.
Right.
It doesn't even matter. I guess I'm just like extending Richard's thought.
Yeah, I think arguably it doesn't. Yeah. This is where I've come around on, and I'm actually more Christian than I have been in a long time.
What do you mean by that?
Huh?
What do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like you, I don't think the belief in the supernatural aspect of what may or may not have happened really matter. Like, I don't know if Jesus literally rose from the dead, like literally ascended into heaven. I mean, again, I'm quoting Richard Rohr a lot, but it's like...
Or descended into hell.
Right. But he's like ascended into heaven, but like where... What does that even mean? Like where is like... We don't think heaven is literally up above us.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Interesting.
So it's like, what is that even supposed to mean?
I've really thought about that. Oh, Lord.
But I'm sorry to keep... blowing your mind here.
More to process. Okay.
But this is what I've kind of come around. And this is why I'd say it matters to me a little bit if a historical Jesus existed or not. To me, whether the supernatural stuff happened doesn't matter. To me, the more miraculous event, maybe this doesn't disagree with you that much, but the more miraculous event is that these teachings even came to be 2,000 years ago. The fact that some Jewish rabbi, like, it's not a given that this truly enlightened, like, thought process and teaching that I think probably did manifest in one from one guy who is super in touch with reality and deep truth that all forms of human hierarchy are bullshit and there's really no difference between you and I, that we are all cut from the same cloth, and we're all, and this is where, like, if you have a view of God that's not guy in the sky mm-hmm. type of God, but like God being a divine, like just a divine, even like makes it sound too special, I guess, or too supernatural, but like a view of God where it's like God being like the ground of all being, like the source energy, whatever mm-hmm. the source,
the life source,
the thing that we were coming, that we came from before we were born, the thing that's always existed that all humans have manifested out of. What does that mean? I mean, whether we look literally like a guy, like an invisible man in the sky, mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that. I don't think there's anybody up there mm-hmm. like that. I don't think there's like an extra consciousness up there, but I do think there's a miracle in a certain form of the word miracle that, yeah, this message of love came and has since resonated so deeply since then that has changed the course of the world.
Truly.
My favorite reading of the Gospels is that it was essentially, this is a huge oversimplification, but when Jesus is talking about sin, he's talking about debt, like actual like financial debt, like indentured servitude.
Yeah.
And so, when he's saying, you know, I'm freeing you from your sins, he's saying I'm freeing you from your debt and the political relations that brought the debt. Which obviously is relevant for people who are inclined to think about like life in terms of the 1% and the 99%.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's like related to, and I again learned this recently, but when he says blessed are the meek, for you shall inherit the earth, an interpretation that makes sense is that he's talking about inheriting there. He's literally talking about like owning land.
Yeah, land reform. Yeah.
Right. And because most people didn't own land back then. If you did own land, you took it by violent means. So he's saying it was a radical thing for him to say, blessed are you who are nonviolent, meek, for you will have land despite being nonviolent.
Yeah. And that's radical in the face of an empire that controls by violence.
Totally. Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm even if you take like something that to me is harder to jive with, like true, like evangelicalism, there are people who subscribe to that, who still think like, yes, you should use the gospels for people who are poor and for fighting against police brutality. Mm-hmm. Fine. Who cares about all that other horseshit?
Right. Right. Like, yeah, like, to me, the beauty of it and what has made me more Christian is just thinking about how, at their best, obviously Christianity has not always been at its best, but at its best, I think it's a very, it's a fairly comprehensive set of values for organizing a community and for like regulating a community of like, okay, we have like agreed, like it's a very, I mean, it's a kind of a, one of the foundations of the democratic process that we're all created equal in the eyes of God, that there's a, there's forms for humility and admitting that you were wrong, but also for reconciliation and coming back into the fold of the tribe, to be, to continue on so you can all move forward together instead of, you know, in the absence of that, it's, well, he screwed me over, so fuck him forever, you know, which, I mean, we see that play. I'm not saying everybody necessarily, I'm not saying everybody needs to forgive everybody for everything out there these days, or like that's not the fair expectation. I don't think, I think everybody has the right to forgive people on their own terms.
But I would say in general, forgiveness is good.
But in general, I think it's good. Yeah.
What kept me in Christianity in the way that I used to know of it for longer was Shane Claiborne's book, Irresistible Revolution. Mm-hmm. Have you read it?
I haven't read it, but I know vaguely of him. What was that? Was kind of the main...
So good.
Yeah.
Because he took a really practical approach to understanding the Bible and wanted people to see Jesus as a revolutionary. And he talked a lot about the evilness of wealth. And he talked about, like, the passage, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. And he's like, that wasn't a joke. You know, like, people are kind of reading over that and, like, focusing on the homosexual stuff. But he's like, this is more important. And this, he's like, we are not living, he said, most Christians are not living any differently than mainstream Americans. Like, they're still in search of wealth, and they're still capitalists, and they're still like seeking their own interest and the interest of their children. And he's like, that's not who Jesus was. That's not who he wanted us to be. And he's like, he wanted us to take care of the earth. And I was like, fuck, this is so good. Like, that's what I always wanted from Christianity, was a revolution. And I wanted, like, that just seemed right to me.
Yeah.
Wealth always seemed wrong. But I didn't always see that as being seen as wrong in the Christian communities that I was raised in. And then in college, like, I went to school with a bunch of wealthy kids.
How big of a crush did you have on Shane Claiborne?
I would have sucked his dick for sure. I don't think I would have like married him. Like, because he's doing good work, and if he wanted it, well. But he lives so simply, like, doesn't buy clothes.
He has dreads, doesn't he?
Has dreads, yeah.
I don't know if that's simple living or not, but it's pretty cool.
Oh, man, he, like, he moved into these really shitty parts of, like, Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah,
or no,
yeah.
Philly. And just, like, to try to reinvigorate the community and engage with them and, like, really fought for the homeless and fought for kids and education and all the stuff that I think Christians should be fighting for that they often don't fight for. Instead, they vote for Ted Cruz.
Right. They hold, like you're saying, hold on to that wealth, or they even, you know, and we all know the most extreme forms of the preaching the opposite, prosperity gospel stuff with Joel Osteen and all that. So saying like, oh, actually, God wants you to be wealthy as hell.
Which is total bullshit. And people aren't actually reading the fucking Bible.
Right. Have you talked to your mom at all about any of this, or?
My mom and I don't often talk about religion. When we were home. Well, when we were home in the summertime, we were both drunk. I was drunk. Were you drunk?
I was drunk. Your mom was not drunk.
My mom was not drunk. So, my mom, dad, us.
Everyone but your mom was drunk.
Yeah, essentially. And My mom, we were in the car, and I don't know why my mom decided at this moment to bring it up, but she was like, you know, guys, I wish that you would take the Bible seriously when it says that there shall be no vulgar language to come out of your mouths, because we all swear, and she does not like it. And I was like, well, Mom, you know, that's your way of interpreting the Bible. I would say vulgar language is like using the N-word, telling someone to fuck themselves, you know, like...
violent language.
Yeah, violent language. Yeah. Stuff that is truly offensive. And I said, if I say I don't give a shit about cupcakes or whatever, like that's I don't consider that vulgar language. And I felt like she was like, huh, okay.
Yeah, your mom's got an open mind.
Yeah, she's pretty reasonable.
No. I mean, you're pretty smart, so it makes sense.
Thank you.
But
true debt.
Yeah, I wonder too. I'm actually like concerned a little bit, or concerned maybe is an overstatement, but as I go into seminary, I'm like, am I going to how much can I like, is it going to be okay for me to curse? I know like seminarians curse and shit, like talking amongst themselves, but like it seems like any public facing thing, it's kind of looked down upon to use any vulgar language. But same time, I don't know. To me, it's not about like trying to be vulgar just to sound cool or edgy or whatever, but if it's I guess it's an argument between like reverence versus like authenticity and what's more important. I think classically or traditionally it's been like, yeah, you should be more reverent and help create a reverent space wherever you are, and
yeah, respect everyone around you and what they prefer,
which I guess, you know, that's respecting what other people prefer is definitely, I can get on board with that. But I also think being able to talk naturally is, it helps me connect to it more a little bit when people are able to just like, I don't know, it's like, it's not putting on airs. It's like just living in a certain degree of realness to me. I don't know. But it's also not like a hard line. I don't even give a shit if I like, need to stop cursing. I sound like a middle schooler now again.
Tell us about seminary.
Yeah, where are you going?
I don't know where I'm going yet. I've been really, the past month or so, I've been doing most of my, like, it's called discernment is the official term people use for any, it's a term any minister uses for anything they're like thinking about. It's you want to discern it. And I've been really discerning between going into Unitarian Universalism as a pastor or going back into Presbyterianism. So I've been just doing a lot of my own like theological work. Like, what do I really believe? What can I like, what's really, what aligns more with my values, and like what aligns more with a mission from my sense of the word God, which is not, again, dude in the sky, but could say like what I think is like the most loving mission. It might be a better way to put it. How can I best be a minister in the world through which denomination? And there's part of me that's like, I mean, Presbyterians are my roots. It's my original tribe. It's my, I have still know the most people there. I think that was my first religious language that I spoke, and I'm still the most fluent in. And so there's definitely an inclination for me to want to go back in that and try to progress it in the way that I believe it should be progressed, so that it can be more, even more inclusive than it currently is. And Presbyterians are pretty inclusive as far as mainline denominations go, especially as far as like Christians overall go. But then the other part of me that is really drawn to Unitarian Universalism is, I've learned, are you guys, have you done your Enneagram stuff?
Yes. Our house is obsessed with it.
I'm obsessed with it. You seem disinterested.
No. It just, honestly, I am not exaggerating, comes up every single day.
That's not true. It is not true. Every single day. That's not true. Yeah. You feel like it does, but it doesn't.
Every day. There's a reference to how I'm acting like a four, or how you can explain Rachel's behavior because she's a wing, whatever the fuck.
I actually think most stand-ups are probably fours.
Yeah, you're only worried about this because you're a four.
I'm a four. I know I'm a four.
I knew you were a four, Joe.
Did you?
I'm not worried about it. I'm just making a statement of fact. It comes up every single day.
Well, I'm going to bring it up a little bit more, David.
No, just like the aesthetics of religiosity, I get down with the aesthetics of the Enneagram.
Yeah. But to me, it's not even like, I don't even have to believe in the Enneagram to me. I mean, I guess there's maybe some very small leaps of faith I have to make. But when I was like reading it, it wasn't like Myers-Briggs or a horoscope to me, because I came in kind of skeptical. It would be like,
wow.
I
don't put Myers-Briggs in the same camp as horoscope, Joe.
Okay, they're Angels. Definitely okay.
Whoa!
All right. Let me back that up. Let me back this up.
I don't want you on top of me right now.
This is working.
let me back up.
Okay.
So the Myers-Briggs is fine. I'm an INFP, but I didn't think it was
What's your analysis of that thing?
No, that checks out. I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah. I'm also like usually borderline between E and I, and I can't remember which one I'm like close to 50-50 on. But I didn't feel like it offered as much, and it offered me a little bit of insight at the time, but it hasn't been really guiding.
Yeah, to each is their peaches. Some people really connect with their Enneagram.
Yeah. And horoscopes, that's definitely not the same.
That's
just the devil.
Why is that any different?
No.
Than the Enneagram? Because the horoscope feels so being based on where the moon location is when you were born,
so
feels extremely arbitrary compared to you taking a test to see which type you fall in. And then, moreover, I read all of them and I had an idea that I was a four. And then I took a test not knowing where it would line me up, and it pinned me as a four. And then I started like really reading the four, and it felt like I was like reading my own biography of like when I've been healthy and unhealthy, or you know, average as is the Enneagram term.
I think they're all the same in that like all humans are so complex.
Yeah,
and we're all of those some of the time.
Right, the like Kinsey scale, but for a personality.
Sure,
but I also know, because the thing with the four is, I'm sure you both, you know, I'm telling it for people listening, is, you know, being the individualist, being authentic. And that has been something throughout all my 20s has been, as they describe, a compulsion, like for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's what got me into stand-up. It's what had me get a tattoo with the North Carolina State motto on it when I was Videri. Saquon Videri, which means to be rather than to seem. That's four as fuck,
wow,
man. I was like 22 when I got that. Way before I'd ever heard of Enneagram stuff.
Wow.
But
a
classic four.
This one is a more recent one. But
that's impressive.
Yeah, I'm going to be filling it out soon, actually, on the wrapping it around.
I wish the podcast listeners could see Joe's guns.
Wow, I was talking about the tattoo.
This is my most recent tattoo.
Is that a bird?
Yeah, it's an eagle with the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina.
Oh,
cool. This is my favorite one.
For both me and Rachel, for different reasons, pull your
Yeah.
That's pretty tight.
Sri Yantra in the middle. It's just a mandala wrapped around it, but the Sri Yantra, which is a Hindu symbol.
That's nice.
But anyway, yeah, so reading about four stuff. What was the original taking off point of this? I can't even remember.
The Enneagram, a Presbyterian.
Oh, yeah,
Presbyterian.
Oh, right. Okay, so given my compulsion for needing to be authentic, I feel so far in my discernment, when I've talked to Unitarian ministers and talking about what problems they do and don't encounter, and also talking to Presbyterian ministers and how a lot of my Presbyterian minister friends have to be kind of guarded in what they say, what they reveal, because they kind of take the classic preacher approach, which we learned all this stuff in seminary, but our congregations either can't or don't want to handle it.
Yeah.
A lot of the oldest members especially are like, that don't be preaching that, because that's not Jesus. That's not... you know, that goes against what the Trinity is, or you know, to even say like, oh, I don't know, maybe Jesus didn't literally rise to heaven because there's no such thing as there's nowhere to go up. You know, they can't say that stuff. Whereas I think that would drive me crazy if I were to enter that. And I need, given my knowing what I am naturally compelled to be authentic, I feel so much more freedom when I think about being a Unitarian minister, where I'm able to be like, yeah, I don't know. But I also kind of like it. I kind of like Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
I consider myself kind of a Christian, but I also can tie in things from Buddhism without having to worry about what somebody says in the congregation.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go.
Observing your arc the past 5 or 6 years, that seems like for the exact reasons you're
saying. it feels very aligned. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So, but that's really only the past week, and I haven't told my parents that I'm kind of leaning towards Unitarianism because I know it's just going
to
like
us to tell them for you.
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Well, they've also been in Scotland, like on a dope trip. So
been on the podcast.
No, but I want to get my dad on.
You should get your dad on, and you should talk about it on the podcast.
Are they pumped about you going to seminary?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No. Big time. Yeah. I mean, it's really weird to me still, like, when I think about it too much. It's somebody, like, it's also weird, like, already people have maybe joked, like, jokingly called me pastor or, like, referred to me as a future pastor, which already feels, like, weird and distancing.
Mm.
Like, it's, like, I already feel like it's creating a sort of, like, weird distant, like, not bad distance, really. It's bad. It feels bad for me.
Setting apart.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, no, I don't. It's like anti what my theology is, that there's anything different between us. But
I'll be your pastor. You can just call me Joe. Yeah, that is what I was going
to
call you.
I'm just going to call everybody else a pastor when I, when I get called a pastor.
I would love to be called Pastor Rachel. In fact, that's what I make my students call me.
Well, what's interesting is, and I don't, even though he would probably be fine with me saying that he said this, I won't say which minister said this, but he's one of my mentors, and I was asking him about like being interreligious as a Christian minister and what he thinks about that with Christianity, because I think all religion, I think basically there's a mystic thread that runs through all religions, and that they were really like all specific cultural expressions of the same basic truths that fit each culture differently. And they it's like, you know, again, like to use a language analogy, maybe certain languages were better at describing certain spiritual concepts than others. Mm-hmm. So if we use all of them together, we can kind of triangulate an even more accurate version of truth. So I was kind of like talking to him about this stuff, and he's like, oh yeah, like Christianity needs to be permeable to other religions in order to survive long term, especially in this day and age, especially with what we know. And he was talking about how there was, he knows an Episcopalian priest who's also like an ordained, whatever their ordination version is, of like a Zen monk. Because there is a lot of common truth, but they're not, whether it's for the old donor money reason or it's, I also think to a degree, and I don't mean this in a condescending way, but I think to a degree, there's just a lot of people that it would be very difficult for them to handle learning like you learned recently, like I learned in college. Like when you start learning, like, oh, that's not literally true. You're like, what?
It's disconcerting.
It's very disconcerting. What's cool about, again, Richard Rohr, this is the Richard Rohr podcast. He's also big on the Enneagram, but
he is. I wonder what, do you know what his number is?
I think he said he's a one, which of course.
Which is what I am.
Are you?
Hello. All the best. All the greats.
Come on.
I'm sorry.
But, you know, he talks about, he kind of argues that you actually need to start off naive, and we need to be, as children, we kind of need to be, I don't know if I agree with him on this, by the way, but he's like, we kind of need like a simple story that we can really believe and be inspired by. And then it's going to be natural that we all get disillusioned at some point. But then eventually he calls enlightenment is the second naivete, where it's like in the Zen sense, it's like, there's a Zen phrase that says before enlightenment, it was a mountain, like in the middle of enlightenment, I saw like, you know, rivers. I mean, I can't remember. I'm fucking butchering this so bad. But it's like, you see like the individual parts of it. Mm-hmm. It's like, then after enlightenment, it becomes a mountain again. Mm-hmm. So in the sense that like there can become, and I guess maybe I'm entering that second, I'm not saying I'm enlightened, but like I'm entering that like second naivete phase where I'm becoming more appreciative of Christianity again, despite what I consider to be an intellectually on, like I'm not trying to, if any part of it starts to fail the reason test, I'm fine with fucking ditching it, you know? But I'm also like, I don't know, excited and like energized by it, like being like informed by that Christianity again.
Yeah. There's a lot of good in it. There's a lot that I like.
Yeah. When's the last time either of you went to church?
Was it
or was it with Ben and Hillary?
Oh yeah, we visited some friends of hers up in
Palo Alto.
How did you like it? What'd you think?
It was fine.
Devin's like, whatever.
It's crazy. we visited some of my Christian college friends, and their belief kind of spurns me
I don't know, maybe either one.
Because when you want to go forward, you spur your horse.
Sure.
It spurs me.
But
toward.
Spurn is also a real word, too.
Yeah. I thought
<That's
the question>.
Like you spurn a former lover.
Oh. I don't know if that's true.
I don't know.
Spurn a lover? Look that up.
Well,
somebody on the internet.
They are such good and pure and generous people that they spur me towards Christianity, because also Ben, my friend Ben specifically, believes in it so steadfastly, and it centers him and I think grounds him and is the reason behind his goodness. And so I'm like, oh shoot, I want that. And I see that God is the center of it. So that has been interesting, because a lot of the time I'll meet Christians and I'm like, well, I'm better than you anyways.
So those sorts of Christians.
Then I judge them.
Are Christians that you reject with disdain or contempt.
Yeah.
Also known as spurn.
Wow.
Oh, spurn.
Looks like the holier than thou atheist over here. Very
spur
cool.
Spur versus spurn.
Good look, bro. I'm a piece of
shit. Yeah, so
thanks for teaching us the truth, man.
I do spurn a lot of Christians, but
oh, I definitely do too.
Yeah, Ben and Hillary spur me.
Well, I recently went to a Presbyterian church in Pasadena. You know, I'm giving my due diligence of like, let's see how I feel like at a bunch of different versions of Unitarianism and in Presbyterian churches. And this one was actually composed of a lot of what I can tell to be like they're fuller seminary students, but are like almost evangelical refugees.
Yeah.
Whereas like you can tell they all had like a strong former evangelical like vibe and look, and like they all kind of had, I hate to say it, but there is like a cliche like Hawaiian shirt type thing that evangelical Christians like to wear.
Yeah.
But and I think Presbyterianism, even though they still believe, it turned me off only because I'm so into using inclusive language when talking about God. And I know a lot of Presbyterians are of like, there's been a big movement within Presbyterian, PCUSA people to like take so PCUSA, there's two branches of Presbyterianism. PCUSA, Presbyterian Church of the USA, is the liberal biggest one. There's also Presbyterian Church in America, which is the conservative one.
So those are like the two opposing.
Yeah.
Presbys.
Right, exactly. Well, they, because they both have the same system of government. That's how, where Presbyterians get their name from.
What's Randy?
What is Randy? I don't know. Where did they go?
PCA can't have women ministers. So if there's a woman minister, then they're PCUSA.
I don't know where Randy goes.
But
we have a lot of friends from Fuller.
Right. And so when I was there, even though the language was like very capital H he and like talking about his kingdom and like all this very, to me, it seems like a very superficial understanding of God. It's hard not to sound condescending in these conversations, but this is how I feel. But I also was like, I saw that goodness in a lot of them too. And I was actually thinking about it like, man. And this is what a phrase I heard somebody talking about, a Presbyterian minister talking about his Baptist minister friend. He's like, he said his Baptist minister friend was like, I'm not a Baptist minister. I'm a minister to Southern Baptists. Meaning like, I'm going to meet them where they are on their faith journey and not blow their minds too much, but do a slower incremental, like
slowly blow their minds.
Like, cause that's only to keep them in the fold and loving each other and in community. And
that way, because she's hoping Shane Claiborne is there.
Shane
boy.
Love of my life.
Clayman.
And I do appreciate that. I actually, that to me sounds beautiful.
That
and
does
that's,
sound really nice.
That idea sounds beautiful. I just know, again, as a four, I would not be suited for that.
Yeah.
But I also don't shit. Here's the other thing about appreciating how I'm different. Well, all fours like to appreciate how they're different. But like, no, appreciate in a way where before where I would have seen like interpreted like, well, I'm valuing authenticity is something everybody should value equally because I value it so highly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm starting to realize like, oh, it's okay to not value being authentic as much as I do. That's okay. And so I'm not saying pastors are hypocritical or wrong to not want to say what they authentically think all the time about stuff because they have different values and they're better at other stuff. They're more designed to do like the slow, gradual, mind-blowing stuff. Whereas I'm like, I just know I would like get fucking depressed if I had to hide behind that all the time. And also I'd have to like delete this podcast immediately.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it. But
that's awesome, man.
Have you been All Saints?
Yeah, All Saints is like, I mean, that's my favorite.
It's
probably, well, until this Unitarian church I've started going to, that is like my favorite church in
is
LA.
It Episcopalian? What is
it? Yeah, it's Episcopalian. Yeah. And they tend to be more left of most mainline denomination people too. But they have
their one in Pasadena?
Yeah, it's the one in Pasadena. And what's cool about them is, and that what was challenging to me about them and also about Unitarians, I don't know how you guys have felt when have you been to that, Devin?
I have not.
They're very social justice oriented, and that's not something that I grew up being like inundated with. Mm. We were more like, we have liberals and conservatives, let's just kind of agree where we can. And like, whereas now it's like a lot of these churches, and especially in LA, are very like challenging of like, no, we need to like put your money where your mouth is as far as your faith. If you really believe that, like, all lives, well, if you really believe Black Lives Matter, fucking prove it, you know?
I do think, though, that all lives do matter.
I do.
I'm going to go back to what you said there, Joe, and...
what if he's like, you haven't seen my other tattoo?
Well, Devin, I need to ask you, too. So you grew up going to Christian private school, right?
Yeah,
and you were Christian growing up.
His mother, no.
My mom, no. So there was never that pressure at home,
or
that standard at home, and it was just from first grade to 12th grade, mm-hmm. I got some version of that,
right? But you weren't like super.
No, I got most into it. The most like fervently, I actually believed. Was first semester of college where I was like, I considered dropping out of school, going to seminary. And then like 3 months later, I smoked pot for the first time. So yeah, it's been so much easier for me to shed and to kind of not take seriously, and for it to not have any like real sway over my life or my choices or my social group.
Right.
But my sisters still believe.
Mm-hmm.
My mom is like truly like at her core like a humanitarian or a humanist, where just like whatever helps you.
Yeah. Have you ever been, I realize I'm asking questions I probably asked you the last time you were on the podcast, but it was also like a year and a half ago or whatever. But, have you ever been involved in any kind of like religious community that's open to like any kind of Buddhist community or like,
I mean, Quakers for a little
bit. Oh, right. Quakers. Yeah. Fuck yeah. I forgot about that.
For a little bit.
I could totally be a Quaker minister if they had them. if they had more, there are some, but like if they had more of them.
So yeah, just that.
Yeah.
I think if we have children, we could raise them Quakers.
Raise them Quakers.
Yeah.
You could raise them Unitarian too.
We'll go to your church, Joe.
Hell yeah.
Pastor Joe.
Oh God, Pastor Rachel. I'll see
you
there.
That's what I like to hear.
It is weird. One of the things that put me off a little bit when I first got in, like first visited Unitarian churches a couple years ago, was their. So I didn't realize this. They're a merger of originally two different Christian denomination, Protestant denominations. So originally it was a Christian Universalist and a Christian Unitarians. Mm. And so they're, and then they realized in the 60s, like, we're basically the same. Mm. Let's just
that's good.
Let's just be together. But that, so their services feel exactly almost like a Protestant service,
okay,
in structure, except for the words they use and the music they use and what the sermons are about. But at first it was kind of off-putting because I'm like, man, I ran away from that. I don't need more of that again. But now I'm starting to kind of appreciate the structure and almost appreciate the alchemical potential of like reinterpreting all those Sundays I spent and having a new way to appreciate the same form. Because there's nothing wrong with the form per se. Yeah. I mean, it may not be your
it
favorite
might be
thing,
boring, but
right. I mean, you might prefer other forms of religious practice, and that's totally cool. But
your dad is still a pastor?
Still a pastor, yeah.
I'd be interested in going to Universal service. Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty dope. Neighborhood UU in Pasadena. Check it out.
Neighborhood UU?
Yeah, there's a couple. There's actually a couple.
That's a fun name.
Yeah.
I'd go to the neighborhood. UU.
But, so, and so when you, but when you guys met and got married, I mean, you're like you're Mr. Ardent Atheist. That's exactly how I think of you. It's not really how I think of you, but and you're, but you were like,
that's not how we sold him to my mom.
But you were like you were more hardcore Christian still, or were you still on your own kind of like whatever?
I mean, shoot, you were always like really, what's the word we've used before? Not torn.
Yeah.
Plagued.
I mean, it's been in. It's integral to who I am.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Even
because of it, she cried the first time we had sex.
Yeah. I did.
Aw.
Even though I didn't lose my virginity to Devin, I still felt like I was tainting my body. Yeah.
Wow.
That God was disappointed in me somehow.
Hmm.
Classic evangelical woman.
Right. Right. I just negotiated my way with God when I first had sex. I was still a Christian. It was my first girlfriend when we were 18, and we were like, at first we were like, let's wait till marriage, and then 3 months in we're like, they probably meant in the Bible, just wait till you're in love, right? Yeah.
Wow.
We're in love. Let's get it on.
Well, that's easier for
that's guys, very convenient, but... Joe.
That's that's what every evangelical wants to say to everything I've said
on this podcast. Very convenient.
Yeah. But y'all,
I mean,
y'all,
it
never came up as an issue or anything?
No.
No,
because I definitely didn't have like firm peace, but I also was not pulled one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And Devin also just, I felt like, bore the image of God. Like he felt,
he does look kind of Christ-like.
He felt very, godly to me.
Well, Devin does have very strong, I'll speak with you in the third person. you're a very principled guy.
Yes. He has integrity.
You have really put your money where your mouth is, as far as like, especially how I've always known you in the stand-up world of like being really true to yourself and not just doing shit to get ahead or because you think it'll be like more successful or something. You're just kind of doing how you want to do it, which I've always admired and respected.
Well, thank you.
As a four.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been the thing that, I mean, it's kind of what you've said from the get-go, Rachel, and what seems to be what you're saying, Joe, is just like, it doesn't really matter what you're calling yourself, just as long as like the substance is there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are living a Christ-like existence, even without Christ by name.
Well, I think what's Christ-like, again, just to like wrap this up, put it in a very, what do you call it?
Put a bow on it,
yeah. To bring back Richard Rohr into this conversation.
Oh,
well, he, again, this, well, is all...
Before you finish, are there any books in particular? Well, no, finish what you're saying.
Well, Sermon on the Mount is where I've lifted most of the shit I've talked about, because it's both available as a book, but I recommend listening to the audiobook version of it, because just hearing his cadence is really like...
He reads it?
Yeah, it's a series of lectures he gave at a workshop in like 1992, but it sounds like it was told yesterday. Like he's talking about systems of oppression and power and like... he even predicts Netflix during a part of, he's like, soon we're getting more and more individual, and soon we're going to be able to just press a button and have movies delivered to our home. We're not going to go to the movies together anymore. I'm like, fucking Richard Moore. Wow.
Hope he had some stock in Netflix.
But, but what he, him talking about Christ made me want to go into Unitarianism more, because, and it's exactly what we're talking about with good old Devin over here, is he talks about Christ's main message was about living in the real. And if you're going to live, and his part of his warning being like, if you're going to live in the real, be prepared to fight some institutions and be prepared to fight power and be prepared to, you know, run into some people who enjoy the status quo or aren't ready to hear the truth.
Yeah.
But when he talks about ultimate reality, that's what we're talking about with all forms of human distinction and hierarchy are ultimately bullshit compared to the realist truth of God's love for everyone, God's grace for everyone.
Mm. See, that, even that right there, it's like, you can say that that's a religious point of view, but it's also like 70 million other points of view.
Exactly.
Like a political point of view, an economic point of view.
Exactly.
A cultural point of view. So, yeah, it's like, why call, why say like, oh, like, if like, let's say you do really support an economic version of that, why would you exclude all the people who can be mobilized religiously to that point of view?
What do you mean? Just to elaborate.
Are you saying that's why religion is useful?
Useful is a cynical way to put it. That's why it's beautiful.
Or powerful.
Yeah.
Potentially powerful.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. And I think part of it is because the original metaphors people were trying to use to describe God, like mystery and source energy and a universal love, were terms people could understand, like a father figure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then the metaphors got out of control and became idolatrous.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Alan Watts talks about, is like, idolatry is creating God in your own image. And what is more creating God in your own image than thinking he looks just like us, you know? Even thinking that it's a he that we're talking, that we're talking about in the first place. But anyway, any final thoughts? Wait, anything? Yeah, you guys, you're still doing backyard bootlegs. Yeah.
Bootlegs.
And bitch face. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got anything? And so backyard bootlegs in which Saturday is it?
That last Saturday of every month.
And,
Cafecito Organico.
Cafecito Organico. Yeah. And is that Silver Lake or Echo Park?
It's Silver Lake.
Silver Lake. Yeah. And then Bitch Face
is the second Friday of every month at Jones Coffee in Pasadena. But also, Joe, this might just be for you, but our roommate Rebecca has an art show where she has created an art piece for each of the 9 Enneagram types.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think I'm going to go. That'll be November 3rd, I believe. It's a Saturday.
She's been working
in downtown.
She's super talented and has been working on it for a while.
Hell yeah.
She's an amazing artist.
I'm
going
to be out of town on November 3rd. Is it going to be available any other time? Is it going to be around any other time?
Maybe you can get a sneak peek.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to be checking out a seminary on that day.
We'll FaceTime.
It's for God. Listen, I promise it's for a good reason. I'm on a mission from God.
But also, there's one's Noble Ground.
Yes, we are, Pastor.
Oh yeah, I'm also producing a special comedy show October 5th. In Echo Park.
This might be out after that, but
well, fuck. So
that's just for Joe.
Then it's just for Joe.
October 5th. I can't wait. Yeah. Too bad for the rest of you.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm glad we had this dinner party. I'm really glad to check in with you guys.
Please let us know how your discerning goes.
I'll definitely be letting the people know. All right, love you guys.
Thank you, sir.
And that's our show. Thank you once again to Rachel and Devin for coming out. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being who you are. ChooseYourOwnReligion.com for old episodes. Go to the Facebook page to keep up with where our next live Choose Your Own Religion is. Keep loving yourself and stay in tune with the universe. I love you. Jamaste.
Hey guys, do you love indie films? Do you love talking about indie films? Me too. I'm Connie Shin, and allow me to be your indie film Sherpa on my new podcast, Indie Darlings. Join me and a new guest in every episode as we discuss that indie darling you loved, hated, were curious about, or never even heard of. The Indie Darlings Podcast. Come on! Subscribe now on Campfire Media, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Campfire.